The following segment is a paid commercial program by Christensen PLLP. It's time for Ask the Expert on News Talk 1340 KWLM.
And Joel Gratz of Christensen PLLP, a partner, joining us live. And Joel, before we get to our program, how did it go yesterday with the Oktoberfest?
You know, it went great. I did the second shift, and I think we were about 350 is what we served yesterday. Mm-hmm. So that was great. We had plenty of food. Every year we kind of keep making more, and we had plenty. And great performance by the band, and everybody seemed to be enjoying. So it was great. The weather was kind of sketchy, but that maybe helped our attendance too, I guess.
Yeah. So now, do you guys get to bring any leftovers home then, those of you that put the dinner on? Or?
Well, yes. I'm not really the producer of the food, so I don't have first rights to it. Not that I couldn't have grabbed some, but usually the team that puts that together gets to take that home.
Yeah, because here I was going to ask that you would bring a plate in for me today, but then if you don't have the stuff, then...
Next year if we do that, I would be happy to bring you some in.
Well, and I honestly was going to try to make it, and it's one of those weird things when you get to be my age and more forgetful. I had a whole bunch of things lined up yesterday afternoon. If I would have thought of it, I think I would have come down and enjoyed it, because it sounds like a wonderful dinner.
Yeah, no, it's a great dinner and great entertainment and just great fellowship overall. So thanks for asking, Bill.
All right. Well, on to the job at hand. We've been hearing some messages on behalf of Christensen PLLP and concerning the new tax laws that were signed into being, what, last April, was it? Or when was it?
Late December.
Oh, okay, that early already.
Right. I mean, that's when everything got kind of finalized, you know. So we've been talking about it a lot. And if you haven't heard about it, you've been living in a rock, under a rock, or you've been on vacation, which is all good. And we actually... usually I come in November for the first time, and this year I decided to come in October, so thank you for allowing my schedule here, Bill, and to start talking about this tax law. And I've already mentioned it's one of the most complicated I've seen in my career. And ironically, the rules are still changing. The IRS is still looking for clarifications. They're issuing regulations. There was a big item that came out in August that clarified some things which were different than what we were assuming. So I wanted to make sure we at least brought it back up again and during our tax planning season here at starting, and we'll go through a few things.
Yeah, so you've kind of picked out a few of the items that maybe are key or they're going to be the most have the most effect, I guess, on maybe getting the forms filled out and hopefully, get things done correctly to where, you're not filing amended forms and whatnot down the road. So
right. Well, I'm focusing on business owners today, knowing that they probably had some of the biggest sweeping changes that probably will impact them the most. Depreciation, that's something that you've heard me talk about before, Bill. It's something that's a real powerful tool, especially for our what I call small business or middle market folks here, not only our farmer producers out there, but also our business owners in the area. And so no surprise that depreciation is a top my list. I do want to highlight a few items. In the past, I referenced a Section 179. That's the first-year write-off for any items that you purchase on a capital nature, combines, equipment of various nature like that. In the past, last year, we had a $500,000 cap on that. Now, one of the biggest changes is now it's $1 million, which is both for new and used equipment that you can then immediately write off. And that's something that most of my clients, Bill, if they're buying $1 million of that kind of equipment a year, that's going to be a long shot. So usually we're in the 500,000 or sub. So, certainly a powerful thing. The Section 179 is kind of, you can dial your number in. It isn't like you have to take all or none. It ends up being, again, very powerful. Now, a few caveats with that. You cannot create a loss with a Section 179 deduction. So you need to have earned income to do that in order to utilize that deduction. So it does have limitations to it, which is why we stress planning, so we don't get to the tax appointment, let's say in February, and all of a sudden we have this, big loss that I can't even utilize this equipment that the owner already purchased.
So if you have a small, let's say, net income, though, and then this deduction exceeds that, that's still okay then, right?
That's still okay, and I can dial that in down to zero, and anything left is going to go over generally a 5 or 7 year life. So again, no harm, no foul, but I look at planning. If someone paid cash for equipment, I treat that as if they're buying fertilizer, you know, buying, you know, paying for wages. It's a deduction that's, you know, in the checkbook. It's already hit and lowered your account. So we like to utilize it when we can. Mm-hmm. You know, one thought for folks who sometimes, you know, combines as an example are so much money that it's really rare for anybody to pay cash, you know, for a combine, where sometimes they go out and borrow money from, you know, Case Credit, John Deere Credit, wherever. And we try to line that depreciation up then with the payment plan on that depreciation. It kind of shields income going forward. So it's a really nice hedge, you know, to create and shield taxable income. Because the worst case scenario, Bill, is you borrow money, let's say $500,000, and you take $500,000 of depreciation year one. In the subsequent years, when you have to pay for it, you have to generate taxable income, right? Because principal payments aren't a deduction. Mm-hmm. So it generates taxable income when there's no depreciation to shield it. So in a perfect world, if we like to line the stars up, you know, if you borrow money, which is totally fine to do that still, just make sure I try to stretch out the depreciation to kind of line that up, unless there's another need to take the write-off. So that depreciation, Section 179, can be very powerful for sure. The second item is what we call bonus depreciation, and this is something that's been on the books for a number of years. It came into play, golly, Bill, I want to say 8-9 years ago when the economy was struggling. Mm-hmm. And under the Obama administration, they threw this provision out there on new equipment where you could basically do the same thing as the Section 179 and write it off in various percentages. We had 100% bonus for a while, then we had 50% for a while, and that had to be new. Now, with the new tax law, bonus depreciation can now be on both new and used. Mm. Okay, and there's no limitation on that, so there's no threshold, and it can create a loss. So it ends up being another powerful tool. If for some reason you've purchased over $1 million of equipment, you can then go into this bucket if you have to and take some depreciation and get some more write-offs. The one negative is that you have to do it by class life. It's really hard for me to dial in. It's an all or none. So if all of your equipment is a 7-year life asset under the depreciation guidelines, either I take zero depreciation or I take 100% bonus depreciation. It's one or the other. So it can be a pretty wide window. Whereas if you remember on the Section 179, I can kind of dial that down or up $1 at a time, which is very powerful. So when it comes to depreciation, the sky's the limit this year and probably going forward. Again, 100% bonus, $1 million of Section 179. Very powerful tool to use, and that's something that we try to use through our planning and identify things. So again, if you cannot utilize the 179 or the bonus, then we just go back to our regular depreciation, which is either 5 or 7. For the farm guys out there and gals, farm assets used to be a 7-year asset. Now it's a 5-year. So if you don't take all that depreciation, now it's going to be a 5-year on your tractors, combines, et cetera. So that's something that's different. And you've got 200% declining balance now instead of 150. For the last few years, Bill, the IRS has required farmers to take 150% double declining balance. So there's a lot more tools in the toolbox, again, to dial it in, which makes that planning even more important. Another change, lastly, on depreciation. Building components like roofs, the HVAC system, the fire suppression system, all things like that, used to be part of the building, and that was depreciated for 39 years. Long time. Now going forward, that does qualify for Section 179. So that's going to hit a lot of folks out there, probably in the business sector, maybe not the farming sector, but in the business section. There's going to be much opportunities because usually the building's the last thing you fix up, right? Because you don't get a lot of depreciation for it. It usually costs a lot of money, and you just don't get a big return on it. Well, I think this is going to influence some decisions and do some things here in the near future to help everybody out. So that's something that's also new.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll maybe even encourage some of those things that should be done, probably even for the health of the of the business and maybe the occupants if it's, you know, an HVAC system or something like that.
So. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the idea, you know, behind the Trump plan and the Congress Congress's plan is to try to keep stimulating the economy. Our gross profit, you know, our gross national product is growing. Mm-hmm. It's not going to hit probably the percent that Trump was shooting for, which is the, you know, above 3%.
I was going to say, was it even 4 maybe?
Well, he might have even said 4. I can't remember. And I think they're hoping that he can reach 3. Mm-hmm. Which is still by far some of the best stuff we've had in a long time.
Right.
Inflation is somewhat starting to rise, as you know, with the interest rates keeping ticking up every so often here. So we got to watch that. So I don't know if the economy is super strong, but it's stronger than it's been for a while. So some of these provisions, I think, certainly have an impact on that for sure.
Now, you also have the 199A deduction, and you were going to explain that a little bit, Joel, as to how that might work for your business.
Right, and this is some more magic that this is a brand new deduction, never been on the books before, ever, effective January 1, 2018 and going forward. This is basically a deduction of 20% of a business's net income comes right off the top. So if you're a farmer and you make $100,000, and you have, you know, that's your only taxable income, you're going to be able to take a write-off of 20% right off the top. It does not lower your self-employment taxes, but it lowers your federal income taxes. So that's it's basically an automatic bill as far as there's no things you have to necessarily qualify for. It's got limitations to it if you have certain income levels, but At the very beginnings of this deduction, everybody has the opportunity, if they're in business, to take this deduction relatively automatically. Again, about a 20% deduction, or it's not about, it is a 20% deduction right off the top. So it's a pretty powerful tool now, again, which is automatic to some extent going forward. Now, some provisions that came out, I mentioned earlier, that they keep clarifying this tax law, and this is a brand new code, so the whole world's looking at it and looking at what was the interpretation, what was it meant to be, and looking at it prior, we were thinking even rental income was going to qualify, meaning a retired farmer who is renting to his neighbor now was going to have opportunity for it. That's what we felt the interpretation of legislation was back in December. They've now clarified that bill where rental activities where you're not directly involved in either the management or production of the operating entity no longer qualifies. Mm. So that was kind of a bummer. But they did allow the fact that if, let's say you're farming as an S corporation, so you have an entity, and obviously we never have farmland in a corporation from planning and other reasons. So normally the farmer owns that land personally. As long as you've got income on both sides and are doing this on an arm's length transaction, you can now make an election to aggregate these activities, so you still get the benefit potentially of the 20% deduction, whereas other people who don't have that direct connection back to the farm or the business will not. So that's a brand new piece. So that provision won't be as robust as we were hoping, because that would have impacted about every single taxpayer I have, either through the business side or renting a property, or they just, you know, mom and dad just died and they've got this farmland they're renting. I mean, there's a lot of combinations that would have worked, and now, unfortunately, it doesn't. So that's kind of the state of the union right now. There could be more regulations coming through that will clarify that, but that's kind of the gist of it right now.
So what would the renter and the landowner have to do? Do they have to come to some kind of, would it just simply a verbal agreement, or there has to be something specifically written down to qualify then?
As far as the aggregation?
Yeah.
There would have to be a rental agreement in place, and it's actually more on the individual taxpayer to show that they have a tie to. So it really isn't a lot that they have to more than normally come to an agreement on. Obviously, the rent contract will be something that they historically year on year will have to come to an agreement on. But as far as getting this deduction, it will be placed upon the individual filing their individual tax return if they got audited to prove their connection, the aggregation, election, and all that.
Oh, okay.
So it's things like that to keep in mind. Now, I had mentioned before, if your income as an individual is over $315,000 married filing joint, you start getting some more rules applied to you and phase-ins that may limit your amount you can deduct to this 20%, which is usually based upon a wage factor and now also on a new qualified asset factor, which is a brand new provision out there that they have to keep track of. And it's not the regular depreciation schedule, but it's a modification and a tweak to it. So I don't know if you're getting the feeling, Bill, how complicated this new tax law.
Yeah, we're starting to get the real sense of that.
Yeah, and I'm trying to stress to the listeners out there that if you're doing your own tax return, good for you. I give you mad credit for giving it a shot. But if there's any year to maybe rethink that, or at least to kind of get the plane, you know, to see how it's looking and get a baseline, you might want to seek out some professional help. There's just so many things that are different. It's almost like they tore every page out of the tax code for the most part and rewrote it and stuffed it back in there and just tweaked it here and there. So nothing that, I shouldn't say nothing. A lot of things are the same, but the ones you don't hear about are the same. It's all these things that we use every day that's become different. And why they had to rewrite, you know, basically the tax code, when in my mind, if they wanted to give us a break, just lower the brackets. Mm-hmm. Not hard to do, right, Bill? It could have been one change and let me get this opportunity through tax savings. So we had talked politics before we got on the air. We're not going to do that now, Bill, of course, but special interests get involved in all that. So it's just a super complicated tax bill that it's going to take probably a season for us to get really good at it before, you know, with the I could probably do tax planning right here live on the air with you, Bill, and get really close on a bar napkin if I had to. And now all those rules are off. There's so many things that are changing and moving targets that it's becoming a challenge, but it's going to be a fun challenge to help out my clients get to the right number.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of bar napkins, I see you had deductibility of meals and entertainment. Apparently some changes there as well.
There is, and I, you know, it's a relatively small deduction, generally speaking, for folks, both on the, you know, if you're an entity or if you're a self-employed business owner. The meals and entertainment deduction historically has been at a 50% rate. So, Bill, if I take you out for supper and we talk business, do some tax planning and buy you a drink or a pop, whatever, Bill, and we sit down and it's a $100 tab, I pay for it, I get to deduct 50% of that, okay, because we had a business purpose. Mm-hmm. Now in 18 and going forward, just for this 1 year, anything that's got an entertainment association to it is completely non-deductible.
Okay.
So if I pick you up to go to the Vikings game next weekend and we sit down and I bought that ticket for you, it's not a deduction.
Mm-hmm.
And if I buy that beer for you and those cheese curds, that may also not be a deduction because they're going to be wondering, what business purpose are you doing during the game when you can't even hear each other's, each other talk, right? So that's something relatively new, not big dollars, but what it creates is an opportunity for folks having to reconcile these numbers and actually segregate this information. Before, we had it all lumped together in one general ledger account. Now we need to have it broken out to really truly do it by the code of the law. We need to break this thing out to not deduct entertainment. Going forward in 2019, the meal deduction is going to be zero as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of transition rules. You know, the old Christmas party, is that going to be a thing of the past? And it probably, as far as getting it deducted, will be. In the future, we are still set to go in 18, and I even want to say 19. You have the Christmas party at Lakeland Broadcasting, it's all deductible. But after that, it's going to be probably a zero deduction for the owners, which... Why they chose that, I'm not sure. It's a really relatively small deduction in the big picture of all things.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those provisions that kind of scratches your head and like, do they really have to mess that up too? And because I have a lot of great conversations over a meal and everybody's comfortable and you get to know your client better. And I mean, those are really neat things. And now I have a choice to make. Do I still want to do that? And ultimately... not get to deduct it, or do I make my client pay for it, which I'd rather not do. So it's kind of a bummer, but something, it's a really small provision, but I wanted everybody to hear that so they can start going into their accountings and identifying these things and isolating it so we can properly not deduct that entertainment piece.
Yeah. So do most professional tax preparers, I'm guessing they're going to be, they actually have some several days of people outline these changes so they're aware of them, and how much responsibility is it theirs to get to know what are all the new ramifications?
That's a great question, and when it comes to my code of ethics and my responsibilities as a CPA preparing a tax return, I am obligated to ask the question. I am obligated to tell them this is what you're supposed to be doing. Upon that, I put it on the taxpayer. So ultimately, if upon audit, If I can show that I've asked those questions appropriately, mm-hmm. and the audit still finds some things that they, let's say they buried the entertainment expense someplace else and deducted it, and the auditor finds it, that is on the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. So it really is, it comes down to ultimately not only keeping your record straight and identifying it and truly obliging yourself to the new tax law, you have to make sure that you're telling the truth. And, mm-hmm. and if you want me to sign the return, I'm hoping that we're truthful to each other. Right. Is there a gray area out there, Bill? Absolutely. I like to live in the gray. But to answer your question, I am obligated to ask the right questions and provide the information that is an interpretation of the tax law and say, all right, Mr. and Mrs. Client, now you know the rules. You tell me what I need to deduct. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a two-way street. It's definitely a partnership working together to get this thing all to work out. So it's that's a great question, Bill. A lot of people assume it's my responsibility mm-hmm. to do all that. And it's really maybe only 50% at the most, you know, as far as my duty.
Right. Yeah, I think some people think I hired this accountant or this CPA. Mm-hmm. You know, if something is wrong, it's on them. Mm-hmm. You know, too.
And we make mistakes. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly things where I might have, you know, tweaked a number or misunderstood a conversation. That has happened. Mm-hmm. And those things I fix and I take care of for my client. But if there's things I did not know and I tried to explain to the best of my abilities the tax law and it's still wrong, yeah, the angst will be on the taxpayer. But we always do what we can for our mm-hmm. clients. It's not about a he said, she said, but like, all right, let's break this down. Let's figure this out. Usually we can fix stuff, you know, right. and there's times where, you know, mistakes have been made or oversights were made or I forgot about that deduction. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that income. Things happen and yeah. we just fix it and we go forward, you know?
Well, and there's, I imagine it all depends on what the numbers look like as to what people, what strategy they want to really utilize too, if they're going to be, you know, putting money away for somebody or,
yeah.
you know, there's all sorts of things, you know, I guess it's just like the harvest. It's nice to have some bushels to harvest, but, yeah. you know, this year there's plenty of challenges. It's been one of the wackiest years yet. I mean, from kind of a cool, wet, late spring, not cool and wet, but late. And then they got the crop in and then things just went crazy. They grew like I have never seen.
Yeah.
And matured. It looked like, we're going to have an easy early harvest. That's what it kind of appeared to me.
Oh, yeah.
And now all of a sudden, you know, who knows when it's going to get done. I mean, it's...
Well, don't say that too loud, but, you know, God has a way to find a window.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember last year, you know, it was wet and cold. I remember we were out trying to rip corn stalks and we were breaking shanks because it was froze and my dad was out of his mind. And next thing you know, mm-hmm. it got nice for like 3 weeks and the best weather was... Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I know you can't count on that naturally in a farmer's mind. We got to get it done otherwise because mm-hmm. I don't know. And you're right. They're right. You can't predict the weather by any means. But I sure hope that this kind of weather pattern is going to change. And these producers are so productive and efficient. Mm-hmm. Bill. And you go to bed one night and wake up the next day and the field's gone.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys are just, they're efficient. Their machinery is sized right to get this stuff done. So it's, if you get a window of at least a week or so, boy, they can get a lot of damage done out there. So yeah. I really hope it's going to change.
Yeah, and it's such varying conditions as far as quality and quantity of the harvest, too. I've heard in sugar beets one of the biggest disparities this year from 10 ton an acre,
yeah.
very small beets
yeah.
that don't even want to stay on the truck. They fall through
yeah.
To 30 ton an acre. So, yeah. I mean, that's a big, big, big spread.
Yes, yes. And the beet country has got a big wide swap, too, or sweep there, too.
Yeah, and some got way too much rain. I mean, just not even close to being, you know,
the corn, you know, it got a lot of leach with the nitrogen, and I heard just at the October feast, mm-hmm. Talking to producer Dumbach Lillian, that he'll be driving along, and the monitor says 230, and he hit that spot, and it's 65, yeah. you know, where it's all green, or was green, but it's dry, but mm-hmm. it's amazing how that all worked out and all that rain, and there's still guys out there that are driving around sloughs full of water, Bill, you know, by Renville and down that way, it's those Redwood Falls, those guys are... I feel for those guys. Yeah. I don't know. That's a major disaster, but nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, how can people reach you guys at Christensen?
Give us a call at 320-235-5937, and one of the CPAs and partners can assist you if you need someone to help.
All right. Well, let's find out what the markets are doing now. Linda Brecky is all set to give us a report.